Well, Halloween is over, and we're mostly still alive, I think. If you missed the Halloween special, go back and listen to that. Seriously, you won't want to miss it. It is definitely worth it, and it took so long to put together. As you know, haunting is a year-round endeavor, not to mention everyone who is still open today and opening next weekend, and then everyone who's opening for Christmas. And so, while we won't be coming to you with daily shows, we'll be back twice per week in your feed. So don't worry, we're not going anywhere. All right, and now, from the Haunted Attraction Network, I'm Philip, and this is your weekly episode of Green Tagged, Theme Park in 30, from Scott Swenson and I. Enjoy.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Green Tag Theme Park in 30. My name is Scott Swenson. I am one of the hosts here with my friend Philip Hernandez from Gantam Lighting and the Haunted Attraction Network. Hello, Philip.
Well, howdy, Scott. How are you?
Doing great. Doing great. All right. So here we are. You're actually not in your regular studio. I mean, those of you who are watching the video will recognize that Philip is apparently has been mugged by a gang of Universal Halloween Horror Nights thugs who are holding him captive by wrapping him up in old Halloween Horror Nights t-shirts.
I can neither confirm nor deny that that is the situation that is happening, but I can confirm that Universal is not a sponsor of the show.
So we can say anything we want to about him, right?
Yes, and we will. We have. Now, it's funny that, you know, Scott and I are both in the, Scott's in Tampa, I'm in Orlando. We're relatively close. We've already met up, but we're still choosing to record remotely.
Well, because we both have like a gazillion other things to do. You know, you've got other, Philip's on his Halloween, his Halloween extravaganza tour right now. And he's here in Florida seeing pretty much every haunted attraction, and he'll be reporting on that on Haunted Attraction Network. Ad nauseum, he'll go on forever because he does, just like me. But he's out, he's doing that. And I've got another haunt experience opening tonight as well. So a small party kind of thing. But so it's interesting because even though we are in the same state, we're not able to be in the same room when we record this because it just doesn't work out that way. And I just call it social distancing. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's safer this way.
It's safer this way. That's the theme for 2020. It's safer this way.
It's safer this way. Well, speaking of safer this way and speaking of what it's all about in 2020, hey, let's talk about the California reopening guidelines. So we probably could have gotten to these last week, but as most of you know, the California has done some... has finally, I guess, released some long-awaited theme park reopening guidelines. And, I just, not being based in California, although a couple of my clients are, I kind of looked through them and it made me kind of giggle in a weird sort of way because I got to thinking, so the guidelines are, you can't open. And so I was talking to a friend of mine who lives in California, who's outside of the industry, doesn't have anything to do with the industry. In fact, he works in television. And he was like, I asked him, I said, so are the guidelines for everything else just as, I don't want to say unrealistic, but I want to say overly cautious. And he said, yeah, it's that way everywhere you go. Now in your, I know Philip that in your, just because I know you, you've probably delved into these a lot deeper than I have. What am I missing? Is that the general perspective, or is it because there's something? I mean, we're both in Florida right now. We know that this is a significantly more dangerous environment than California is when it comes to the spread of COVID, and the numbers are showing it. So why is it that California is making it so difficult for the parks to reopen?
Well, don't ask me.
Based on your expert opinion.
I don't even know how to broach this topic, really, because I guess, with so many things in 2020, we will not really, I don't think we'll ever know whether it is a, how much of it is political. I think it is, that's the first disclaimer. Mm-hmm. We don't know how much of it is. I have no idea. yes, California has always taken the much safer route, you know, having been one of the first areas to have hotspots and having lots of people in the area and whatnot. You know, they've been very cautious the entire pandemic, ultimately. And in that vein of consistency, like thematic consistency, if you take their measures and their seriousness and you apply it to theme parks, it's really not surprising what they came up with. It's really like it's in line with how they've been handling everything. So I think I don't know how to answer the piece of it. So is it in line thematically? I believe that it is with what they've been doing. I don't know how much that makes a difference that I'm not sure anybody really ultimately definitively knows. I don't know. I don't think there is an answer to that. It's also the only thing that strikes me as weird about the situation is, well, there's so many things. There are a lot of things that are weird about it. So I can like take a step back. There are a lot of things that are weird.
So it's completely understandable, but it's totally weird. I that's why I actually tossed it to you, because I was going through the same internal dilemma that you're going through right now. I mean, the fact that they actually sent somebody to Florida, mm-hmm. To figure out how Florida reopened, how, you know, Walt Disney World in Orlando reopened, in order to reopen Disney in California. And that, you know, I think we talked about it on the other show where I said, it's sort of like sending the wolf to figure out how to be a sheep. You know, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And yet at the same time, I can imagine that there is a great deal of the economy that could benefit significantly from finding ways. And I'm not saying reopen, and I'm not saying, you know, go up and I'm not saying do Florida. What I'm saying is do it in a way that it makes it possible to continue to move forward in a metered and progressive way, so that it's not like a light switch. Again, I'll spout my same old phrase. It's not a light switch, it's a chess game. We got to keep making moves that move us toward a win, not just waiting for it to all just magically disappear. And to me, as much as I want to be safe, I mean, I wear 2 to 3 masks a day, because I change masks if I change locations. So that's this guy. I also step around people who aren't wearing masks. We were just talking about that, you know, here in Florida, and I will give them a wide berth. So I'm not saying let's be reckless. What I am saying is let's be realistic and hold people to a certain level of standard, so that we can not only keep moving forward, but keeping people safe. And I think that from what I've read with the California stuff, it seems a little too far on the other side.
Well, it is. What makes it so interesting is that, well, to take a step back, to look a little bit, you mentioned the economics of the situation. You know, we did cover previously how they've already mentioned the amount of money they think that California's suffered in terms of lost economy by Disneyland being closed. But I will point out just like an asterisk here, which we all know in the industry, but we all know the size differential, you know, between Disneyland, Disney World. And we also know that, you know, Disney World, Orlando is set up to be a tourism economy. The mm-hmm. whole city is a tourism economy. That is not the case with Anaheim. And like basically when you, in Orlando, almost everybody, so many people rely on tourism, mm-hmm. and there are other jobs in California that are not just Disneyland related and Universal related. So, you know, that is the first thing, but it is a big deal. And what makes it interesting is that Knott's is open, and they're opening under the restaurant guidelines and the outdoor eatery guidelines, and they're not opening with any rides intact. And so that's what makes it interesting to me is, you know, they're right down the road. And I know the county lines are different. Mm-hmm. I know that some of the legal stuff is different involved in that. But if you look at the overall principle that most people have been following, and even that is allowed in California, is that if you are outside and you are socially distanced and you're staying with your group and you're checking these boxes, then it's generally okay. So I guess my question would have been, that would have been my main question is, could we have put our brains together and come up with a way for Disneyland to open where they don't do any rides and they don't do even, I bet you if you had given the challenge to them of you can't even open any of your indoor facilities at all or your rides, you can let people walk down Main Street. People still would have done that. A, that's 100% they would be there every day and it would be at capacity. And B, you know, Disneyland is so creative, their team there, they've always had to be creative with the space that they've been dealt because it's so much smaller. Mm-hmm. And the projection mapping and all the fun stuff, you know, they could put characters and singers in the balconies and distanced from people. You know, they could do a lot.
Well, what Florida did.
What Florida did. They could do a lot. And that would be my question is how come it's okay to go to pumpkin patches and go to all these other outdoor things and to just hang out with people outside, but it's not okay to hang out with people outside at Disney where you could still maintain social distance. And how come it's okay to go to downtown Disney and to go into a new store that they open at downtown Disney? And it's not okay to just walk, like literally walk in the theme park, which is still all mostly outdoors. You know, it's not like it's a indoor theme park, you know, it's outdoors. And those are my main questions. Like how come we can't find a way to make this work at least so that we can see something? And although I do have to say, I do think that something's going to have to change. Well, maybe that's just me being a theme park person where I'm like, something's going to have to change because the way that when you go and read through the article and then you read what some of the experts are saying, basically a lot of the scientific community experts do not believe we're going to get into the phase that they're saying is required until for almost until next summer. So right. We're looking at maybe, you know, almost a year of them being closed. And that is, I'm not sure that's going to stand because that is a big, it's like I'm going to do a quote from the Dark Knight, you know, it's kind of like, where it's like if things change suddenly on people, that's when people get angry. But if, you know, like you warn them that it's going to be a change. So I think this would have been a case of if you just keep saying
it's boiling the frog.
Exactly.
Yeah. We're warming up the water slowly. So, you know,
and that's it goes back to your chess game. Like, and I know people hate to hear this, but it's like I think generally people panic less when you do this whole let's extend the thing every month as we check, you know, because then there's some hope. And this is a different approach altogether. Right. It is an approach of saying you're not going to open your theme park for another year. And that is, I mean, telling people that after they've just dealt with 2020 and being like, you don't get theme parks for another year. I mean, that is, can you imagine if Universal said this week, you know, this week Universal announced one of their mazes for 2021. Mm-hmm. That was just yesterday.
Yep.
Can you imagine if they had said instead, we decided we're not going to open Halloween Horror Nights in 2021. Like, oh my God. I mean, that's effectively what's happening here to the Disneyland side is we're not going to open Disneyland for another year. And that is just such a,
You're right. There's a shock factor there. And I think it's interesting, you know, you talk about Knott's being open, but look at the history of Knott's. You're saying
and they were a restaurant. Yeah.
They were a restaurant first. So
and that's why
they're not afraid of it. I think that, you know, I think that Disney is looking at it going, okay, is it going to be profitable for us if we open up under limited capacity? And I think that's what Halloween Horror Nights said this year. They said, you know, based on all the things that we are going to be required to do, and this was, you know, obviously back when they still had time to do it, they were going to be required to do so many things, they just wouldn't make as the profit margin that they're looking for. I can't say whether they'd be profitable or not. I don't understand their business plan well enough to say that. But I'm sure that was their, you know, weights, their checks and balances. And I think that Disney may be doing the same thing. But again, it doesn't just affect Disney. The California rules do affect everybody. They do affect Knott's. That's why they're opening under different rules. They do affect, you know, all the smaller parks. They even affect some of the FECs that have rides. So you kind of have to look at the whole thing. And I challenge governments, again, I don't want to make it political, but I challenge governments to, instead of looking solely at how do we keep everyone 100%, because honestly, the way to keep everyone 100% safe is martial law. And we all are under house arrest, you know, which some areas have kind of gone through already. I think there are smaller things that can be done and enforced that will be just as effective as saying we can't have theme parks or theaters or, you know, all of that stuff. It goes back to when I was working in the theme park. The answer to any problem was not, it wasn't how can we not do this? It was how can we do this? And I think it's just that's the switch that has to happen. It's not the light switch from going closed to open. It's the switch to how can we make this happen? And quite honestly, Disney on a larger scale is actually doing that and putting a lot more into streaming and a lot more into other technologies. And unfortunately, the theme parks are not part of that, but I'm not sure whether that's Disney's choice or whether that is some of the restrictions that have been placed on the parks that are forcing them in that direction. I just don't know. So for our next section, oh, I'm sorry, Philip. Go ahead. You disappeared for a moment. Are you back? I cannot hear. Oh, there you are.
So I think you are 100% correct on the business side of things. Like, we don't know the finances of the parks and whether or not it's financially viable. My last pop in here before we move topics is, I agree, though, with the mindset. And I think the mindset is something that everybody, all of us, everyone listening, take it with you to work, take it with you to your attraction, the mindset of how can we make this work? And don't think of, kind of leave your, as much as you can, we do this at work, try and leave your negative emotions at the door and just be like ideation phase as much as you can without judgment and then take it from there. And, you know, Tokyo Disney, when they reopened, they did it based on location. You know, that was a major complaint in the report filed by the governor of California, is that he said a major risk factor was basically that people travel to Disneyland from all over. And so they're right. Bringing infection there. And, you know, Tokyo's answer was, we're just going to lock it down. So you could, first was the local county, only people within a certain, that live within a certain mile radius and are, like, have their IDs registered to that address can attend. And then they slowly, you know, then it was 50 miles and 100 and then so on and so forth. And that kind of thinking, you know, I think you could go through most of the governor's complaints and you could say, how about we just make it location-based and we're not going to let people fly in and go to Disneyland. Right. And how about we just don't open any of our indoor facilities? And how about we just make it outdoors? And how about we just let people take pictures? Because you know what? I do think that if you just let people walk in to take pictures, you would still get people do that, because look at the selfie museums.
Yep, and, absolutely. You know, it would be sort of like, you know, Meow Wolf with Mickey ears. So you could definitely do that. And I think the interesting thing too about Anaheim is when you look at the balance between outside tourism guests and season pass holders, it is inverse to to Florida. You know, there's significantly more local.
It's a local park. Yeah.
Yeah. Local park with an international reputation. So yeah, I think they could definitely do that if they chose to. So anyway, let's move on to our next topic. We call this pluses and minuses. You've heard us say pretty much from the beginning of our show, because we started mid-pandemic, that there have been pluses and minuses that have come out of the whole COVID-19 thing. And there was a really interesting article that came out just a couple days ago. Bernard Donahue, who is the CEO of ALVA, came up with this, which is the Association of Leading Visitor Attractions. And he came out with this article that was a ton of things that were positive that actually came out of COVID. And I know that, you know, everybody's like, well, I don't want to talk about the positive because everything else sucks. But the truth of the matter is, I think these are really important things to at least identify. And the first one, the one that hit me the most, is actually the number one thing on his list, which is a greater appreciation of the value of attractions. You know, for all this time, we've been saying attractions are secondary. They're not something that we absolutely have to have. They're nice to haves, not have to haves. And there's a quote. Let's see if I can find it here. It says, one of the things that comes out of this is that there is a greater number of politicians and civil servants, and indeed decision makers, have fully begun to appreciate the value of tourism and of visitor attractions. So if nothing else comes out of this hellish journey, the idea that there are people who are decision makers, who are key players, who have a better understanding, you know, sometimes you don't realize what you have until you lose it. And if it changes that understanding for the future, that's got to be at least something positive. You know, the other thing that we were talking about in one of our shows not too long ago was a more collaborative industry. And I know that's true for me because as an independent contractor and consultant, I'm working actually more now than I was at this time last year. I'm working on more projects, but I'm working at them in a different capacity. I've now teamed up with production companies. I've subcontracted with other people. I'm doing different kinds of work. Instead of coming in and doing a full redo of things, I'm going in and doing evaluations to help certain clients make their experience more cost-effective or to maintain the quality while reducing labor. So I'm looking at the industry differently and working with, you know, potential clients in the past. I would say, you know, I'm really not that interested in coming in and being an evaluator for you. I'd rather come in and rewrite everything. So when you decide it's time to change, let me know. But that whole mindset is gone. You know, and I think it's important to recognize that those of us in the industry on both sides, you know, both the attraction owners and the vendors who provide services and goods to the attractions have to discover there are new ways to work together and who would have been one of my enemies. In fact, one of my clients right now, I'm working as a subcontractor with a company that I put in an opposing bid for the same project for. And when we sat down and said to the client, you know what, actually, for this amount, you can have both of us. We got the gig. So it is so essential to look at that collaborative nature within our industry and find ways to make it work. Philip, did you get a chance to thumb through this article? Was there anything that stood out for you?
Well, a lot of things stood out to me.
Of course they did.
I don't want to be a negative Nancy.
But you're going to be. Go ahead.
I was going to say, so I don't actually have anything to say. I simultaneously agree and disagree with these points. I think I'm really happy there's an article out here that is trying to make positive things. I do think there's a lot of accuracy in this, but I don't think it's as well. Anybody who is living in the U.S. right now, you understand that this is not, it's not like, anyway, so.
It's not some, what? No, go ahead and say it. It's not what?
Well, this is a great take on it to make things positive, but it is not, the first one, you know, people have seen the value of attractions. That is true, but not I think it's more like people have, for the first time, been awakened to a lot of things. You know, we've seen the one thing we all know is that we've seen record voting, whoever you want to vote for, we've seen record voting, which means that people have awakened to their democratic responsibility. And we've also seen record numbers of support for Black Lives Matter and for just everything, just whatever your views are, people have views. And they feel very strongly about them for the first time in a long time. So I don't think it's just an awakening at the about tourist attractions per se. And I would almost say that I'm not sure. I feel like we've seen bigger increases in awakening on other topics. And I think the people that are more interested in the tourist attractions are the people that have been affected by the closings. Like people, I think for. You have the two ends. You have the people that can afford still to go to them and they are upset about that. And then you have the people that are employed by them that are upset by it because suddenly their job disappeared and they didn't think that could happen because Disney is so stable, you know? So you have these two dynamics and then you have everyone in the middle who can't afford to go to it and that had a different job. And I think they are not thinking about this at all. I think they are thinking about food and about education.
I disagree. I disagree. Stop thinking of theme park as Disney and Universal, number one. It's not the case. This applies to museums. This applies to zoos. This applies to local attractions. And when those close, people don't have anywhere to go. And working a lot now with smaller and local attractions, Disney be damned. Absolutely right. There are people who don't care whether Disney opens or not. But what this is saying is, because this is coming from a place where there is no Disney, there is no, you know, the closest one is in Paris. So this is coming from the UK. So these are positive things that do not apply to the almighty Disney or to the almighty Universal. Those are, I mean, they're wonderful organizations, but they don't define the entire industry. And
globally, and that's true. Yeah. And in the small towns as well. Yeah.
The demographic that you just said doesn't care about this does care about this. They don't care about Disney because they're not going to go and they're not working there. But when their museum closes down or when their FEC closes down, it's going to show that these voices need to be heard within government. And you're right. People are voting more because they're recognizing, look what I've lost. Yeah. And you know, like it said, like the quote I said in there, the civil leaders and the decision makers are becoming more aware that the attractions industry, not just the big boys, the attractions industry does have a very important and vibrant place within society. And I think it's going to help us in the long run. It's interesting that you mentioned, you know, the whole Black Lives Matter and the whole controversy of white supremacy and white privilege and all that sort of thing. That's also something that they mentioned in this particular article. And that was, you know, the design of these kinds of things, because there is a greater focus on it outside of the world of the theme park. Moving forward, we need to reinvent better so that we're not just telling it from the 50-year-old white guy standpoint.
Yes.
And I think that is something that when COVID and, you know, a re-evaluation of how we treat people of color when they come crashing into each other, that will result in a better, more informed perspective going forward. So I don't agree that you can sit there and be doom and gloom and say it only affects, you know, a small portion of the world. It doesn't, because that's not what this article is talking about.
Well, and I mean, I do agree with all, I did preface it saying I do agree with all their points, and I still do. I don't know, maybe I'm just in that like 2020 funk where I'm like, I want to see something positive change. Like I want to, you know, see it come out. And I do know there has been positive, but I want to see like lasting, you know, I don't want to be in this situation again. And that is something they mentioned in the article too, about how like attractions are saying now is the time to collaborate and to understand we're going to make plans so that this doesn't happen to us again if there's another pandemic or another shutdown. And something here too, recognizing the importance of front house staff. I 100% agree with that. I've been front house staff and I 100% agree with that. But what I would like to see as well is like, now that we've recognized it, can when we are reopening, can we work in a higher wage from the get-go to our cost analysis for these attractions? And when we're looking at bringing in a new show, you know, Disney's been cutting shows left and right, but when they do bring back shows and when the smaller parks bring back shows, when we bring in exhibits and we bring in actors, can we plan from the get-go for the financial model to include it being a high enough wage to be competitive for these people in the future so that overall they have a bigger safety net and they're like protected because they are important. They do, just like was telling you earlier, the actors at the Zoo Tampa experience I went to made the experience for me,
because I've been involved intimately, you know, full disclosure, because I was the creative director of that event, I can speak to it and say it was out of necessity that those performers are being compensated with a higher wage than other local attractions, because we knew that. And I'll give you another example of how that's happening. You know, you say you want to see something that's happening right now. Well, as we enter into the Christmas season, one of the most difficult things for theme parks to do right now is to hire real beard Santas who are willing to do a live experience, because right now there are multiple companies who are snapping them up and using them for virtual experiences and paying them, no lie, three times, starting at three times what the theme parks are paying them on an hourly basis. And they get to work from home. And most real beard Santas are gentlemen over a specific age. And so they don't want to get out. They don't want to expose themselves to additional dangers. So this is a perfect example of something that is happening right at this very moment, that living wage, virtual wage, and the companies are looking at it because it's a win-win. They're going, we can sell these experiences to significantly more people all over the world who fall into those two categories of the people who can't afford to go to a theme park and the people who don't work there, and we can make money off of them. So, you know, I think they are happening. I think we just have to, again, open our eyes and recognize that, yes, it's a crappy time right now. And, you know, you mentioned the 2020 funk. Okay, now we got to put on our big boy and big girl and big they, them panties and say, let's look now towards how we're going to fix this as opposed to just wallowing in the fact that it happened. And that's my thought.
My last...
You have less than 2 seconds.
Okay. My last anecdote for this is that one of our friends, Cody Bailey, speaking of people waking up to realize attractions are things, Cody Bailey at his Hush on Attraction, so Hush on Attraction, hosted a rally there, a political rally, and they reached out to him about that because, well, I don't know what the reason is, whoever knows what the real reason is, but I just like the idea of I can't even think of the last time anybody on any side of the political spectrum wanted to go and have a rally at a haunted house. That's just,
but again, it's showing that the differences are being made now. And I think we need to continue to embrace them and find ways to make things work and figure out, you know, how can we avoid this happening? Based on the training that I took after this started, basically the only way to be prepared for a crisis is to always be prepared for a crisis. And this is a biggie. So we have a lot of time and we can take the data and never anticipate that it's never going to happen again and never anticipate that it's all going to go back to the way it was before, because it's not. So we have to continue to learn from our mistakes and find new ways to continue to be prepped for the next big change. So that's our 30. Actually, this is the first time we've ever gone over. So, but it was important. And I was on a rant. So anyway, until next time, this is Scott Swenson with Philip Hernandez, Green Tag Theme Park in 30. We will talk to you next week.
Alrighty, that's it for today's show. And if you liked this episode and you are listening in iTunes, please give us a review. Those reviews really do help make sure that our content gets found by other haunters that need to find it. And if you have already given a review in iTunes, but it was several years ago, you can actually go in and update that review, because they tend to fall off after a couple of years, and we've been doing this for 6 years. So if you have news or topics that you would like us to talk about on the show, you can email it to me at philip@hauntedattractionnetwork.com. If you are listening on a platform that doesn't allow reviews and you would still like to help us, it would be wonderful if you could send this to a friend and introduce another haunter to what it is that we're doing over here. And remember that additional stories and content can be found on our website, hauntedattractionnetwork.com. And if you want to be part of the conversation, join our Facebook group at Haunters Toolbox.
This is a Haunted Attraction Network production.